Joining us now, he's one of our best friends of the show, former PGA president and author of Unfriended, Ted Bishop joins us. Ted, welcome back into the Golf Shop.
Hey, guys. Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Since we have U.S. Open coming up next week, Ted, I want to jump right into U.S. Open. Aaron Hills is kind of the great unknown, and we just had Jim Lombardo, the head golf pro from there, on. What's your impression? I mean, we've heard Adam Scott already kind of get on the golf course. Jordan Spieth, who played the U.S. Amateur, was asked about the golf course, and he really didn't remember a whole lot about it. What's your expectation that we're going to see at this U.S. Open?
Oh, I think you're going to see a good U.S. Open. I think that, the USGA learned some things at Chambers Bay. There's probably some similarities in the two golf courses, but I know there's already been, some changes in what people thought was going to be the original course setup. So, I think it's going to be great. I think that if you look at how the weather has been here in the Midwest, and I'm not too far, I'm maybe 4 hours from Milwaukee, it has been the windiest spring that I can remember in the 40-some years that I've been in the golf business. And certainly this is an open site, and I think that wind is probably definitely going to be a factor up there.
Well, Ted, in your time with the PGA and setting up the PGA Championship and looking at scheduling and all that stuff, did you ever pick courses that were as young as Erin Hills and Chambers Bay are? And when doing so, are there benefits to that because it can be sort of major event ready? And what are the drawbacks to picking places that are, only a decade old?
Yeah, well, I think the first, I'll start with the last question first. I mean, I think the first drawback is you don't have any past major championship history to draw from, as it relates to just how you would set the course up and really kind of what your expectations were. And, I remember being up at Whistling Straits back in back in the early 90s. And, there was a lot of chatter about how difficult the 18th hole was going to play. It was a bad, poorly designed hole for the tour players based on, where they had to carry the hole played. During the week, the hole played into the wind all week. And ultimately what happened was the direction of the wind changed. The tees got moved forward. And, it turned out being a great par four finishing hole. And that was kind of one of those decisions that was made on the fly. And Mike Davis I've got a lot of respect for Mike and his ability to set the golf course up. I mean, just looking at some pictures of the golf course, and I'm looking at them right now as we speak, and there was just an article that Golf World put out 41 minutes ago talking about the fescue rough being maybe the most predominant feature up there. And I get back to the wind and the players' ability to control their golf ball. If it does wind up in some of these rough areas, which look pretty close to the playing areas, it could get, really interesting. But the USGA, I think, has been totally different than the PGA of America from the standpoint they've not been afraid to go out on a limb and look for sites that are relatively new and play their major championships there. And that's just been a total difference in philosophy between the two organizations, not one being necessarily right and one being wrong.
Right. Well, and another difference in philosophy seems to be in course setup for the tournaments themselves. I mean, we all as golf fans are conspiracy theorists, but what do you think really goes on in the room when they start to prepare these golf courses? And I mean, do they ever really go in with a score in mind? I mean, we looked earlier in the show, last 20 years, there are a couple of outliers. There was a 15-under and a 16-under, and there were 2 5-overs. But, of the 14 remaining or 16 remaining events in the last 20 years, the average scoring was minus 3.2. Do you think there's really some evil person who sits in a room and talks about, we'd like these guys to finish over par?
No, I don't know. I would say this. I mean, I think it's always been the goal of the United States Golf Association to make the United States Open the most demanding test of golf that players of that caliber are going to face each and every year. Excuse me.
And certainly their track record over the years in terms of scoring would lend itself to, you know, to that kind of theory. Now, excuse me, I can only testify to, you know, what Kerry Hegg would have done when we do these PGA championships. And, you know, we always wanted to provide some excitement to the player, to the fans in particular, and give the players a chance to feel that they could be aggressive and they could take some gambles and make some birdies. And I think if you look at the PGA championship scoring, for example, year in and year out consistently, it's going to be somewhere probably between 10 and 15 under par. And again, it's just a difference in philosophies and what the two organizations are trying to accomplish with their tournaments. But, you know, I can remember going back to the 1974 U.S. Open at Wingfoot and, you know, watching Hale Irwin, you know, just slog it out on a day when, you know, everybody was making bogeys. And that's kind of been the norm of that tournament for the past 40 or 50 years. And honestly, guys, there's a lot of people that enjoy watching that kind of golf. They like to see the best players in the world make mistakes, be tested. And I personally don't see anything wrong with it.
Again, we're talking with Ted Bishop, former president of the PGA and author of Unfriended. And I'm sitting down here at Kiawa, at the Kiawa Resort, Ted. And we know they had the 2012. Rory McIlroy won by just a few strokes here. Back in Charlotte, we're going to have the 2017 PGA Championship, and the PGA comes back to here in Kiawa in 2021. Give me a feel for, you know, when you were the president of the PGA, what kind of courses did y'all look for in terms of hosting the PGA Championship? And just kind of a feel for, you know, are you looking for a specific site, a specific market? What kind of things do you guys look for when you look at down the road at future sites?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And I think the three predominant things really you looked at, and in no particular order. First of all, would be the quality of the golf course and the way that it was going to test the players. Now, there's a lot of courses that fit that bill. And so then the other two criteria that come into play would be the market that you're going to play it in. What's the ability to sell corporate hospitality in that market? What's the ability to sell tickets and generate on-site revenues? And, you know, thirdly would be how big is the site and what kind of infrastructure will it lend itself to? And, you need a place that's got a lot of room based on the corporate hospitality demands that take place at major championships. And, you know, in a lot of cases with the PGA of America, we went to golf courses that actually were 36-hole facilities that had plenty of room in other parts on the property, you know, to make things happen. Kiawa was a site that we originally thought might be a little bit tight from a corporate hospitality standpoint, but, you know, worked out nicely, and that fit the bill. But I would say those would be, without question, those would be the three major criteria that we looked at when we evaluated a major championship. I think, you know, now the discussion with the PGA of America, with all the talk of the championship being moved to May, comes into play as it relates to what sites are no longer feasible to be playing at PGA in May. I mean, where does that leave Hazeltine? Where does that leave Whistling Straits? Where does that leave Oak Hill? Even though that's been named as a PGA championship in the 2020 somewhere. And, you know, are more facilities like, will Quail Hollow be in the rotation more than once? Will Kiawa surface again? Because I think you got to start turning your eyes to the south, you know, if you're going to look at playing a championship in May. And that's going to change some of the criteria probably.
Now, would you be in favor of moving to May, or do you like the PGA in August? I mean, personally, I like the PGA in August. I like the fact that, you know, you can bring more venues in. I think, you know, obviously in the southern venues in August, it could be, you know, stifling heat. But then again, like you just said, in some of these other northern ones in May, it could be a little bit dicey. I mean, what would you be in favor of if they gave you the final say? And they said August or May. Ted, what are you saying?
Well, I would keep it in August. I totally agree with you. I like the fact that it's the last major of the year. If you do have a situation where somebody's trying to win a Grand Slam, then it increases the prestige of the PGA Championship even more. I like it being the last major championship in the year of a Ryder Cup, although the Olympic golf has changed that dynamic once every 4 years. And, you know, when I was president, we named Harding Park in San Francisco as the site for the 2020 PGA Championship. And I can tell you quite honestly, you know, one of the reasons we did that is because we did want the option in 2020, an Olympic year, to possibly move that championship up earlier in the schedule. Now, you know, this situation took place last year. The PGA was actually played a couple of weeks earlier than it normally would have been played. It was played a couple of weeks after the Open Championship. And a lot of people don't realize this, but the PGA Championship in 2016 had absolutely no bearing on who made the Olympic team. And, you know, that makes that championship, in my opinion, a little bit irrelevant in an Olympic year. And that's why I think once every 4 years, when the Olympics are being played, and golf is going to be part of that, then it makes total sense to play the PGA Championship earlier in the schedule. But other than that, I love it being in August. You're just not competing with so many other things in the sporting world. And, you know, if you move that championship back to May, guys, you got the Kentucky Derby the first weekend in May. You got the Indianapolis 500 the last weekend in May. You've got Mother's Day the second weekend in May. And I realize they play the Players' Championship traditionally year in and year out on Mother's Day, but you're really limiting yourself to the window of when you can play that championship. And I think the other thing that people forget from an agronomic standpoint is a lot of the things that were done to the Players' course at Ponte Vedra were done agronomically for that championship to be played in May. So when you move that thing back to March, you know, you still run into some different weather conditions in March in Florida than you do in May. And they're going to have some challenges there from an agronomic standpoint, I think, with the Players' Championship. So there's a whole gamut of things that go into play here. It's just been my personal speculation. If that PGA Championship gets moved back to May, there's had to be some financial remuneration given to the PGA of America by the PGA Tour. And we all understand why the Tour wants to do all this, because they want to complete the FedEx Cup Series before football season starts. Because let's face it, as much as we all love golf, when you get into September, everybody's watching football and not too many people are paying attention to golf.
Yeah, and when you're looking at all these factors, agronomy and how it's going to set up, and do they have room, and TV, and all that, this is going to be a tough question, but I know you like tough questions. Where does the walk-up fan, gallery fan, play into this? Because, you know, there are places that really work out well for everything, except it being hard to get in and out of for the everyday, you know, fan with the grounds pass. Does that kind of get, for an international event, does that sort of get shuffled to the back of the pack in terms of priority?
For an international event, are you switching gears here and going from a three?
Because you're televising a major that's got to draw an audience on television and whatever else.
Well, I think when the U.S. Open was played at Marion, there was a limit in how many spectators that could be on that golf course. When the PGA Championship was played at Kiawah, there was a limit to how many spectators could be there, just based on holes that are not spectator-friendly. When that happens, there's, I guess, other allowances that have to take place, the deficit up or on-site at ticket revenues. Now, in the case of the PGA of America and the USGA right now, they're both cash cows. They've done tremendous TV deals, so they're both in a position where they can afford to bite off a $1 to $3 million loss on-site revenues, because, quite honestly, they got more money and they know what to do with. So, I guess to answer your question, the fans at some point in time, I would get back to the three criteria that I gave you when you asked me that that question a little while ago, and I didn't mention spectators, and of course being spectator friendly. So I, unfortunately, maybe the spectators are not the priority that they should be.
Well, Ted, man, we always love having you on the show. We want to have you on again soon, and hope everything's going well for you.
That is, and just give me a call. I love talking to you guys anytime.